This is Closet Practice, a podcast for queers of all stripes to share their stories, whether they're in, out, or out curious. You can take queer life out of the closet, but you can't take the closet out of queer life. Maybe, though, we can shine a little light inside. I'm your host, Documenta Barbarism, the It Girl. Permanent bottle openers festoon each rail post of the patio where Janet and I spoke. The last rusted traces of former occupants' forgotten bacchanals in a home where the topography is now less beer bottle and solo cup, and more milk bottle and sippy cup. I have forgotten quite a bit about Dinglemary's early years, but I remember the unimpeachable sanctity of nap time. So we arranged to meet while the twin toddlers Janet is raising with their partner were resting. Luckily, I showed up in time for the pre-nap snack song, Road to Hell from Hadestown, which was adorable. The song was actually an inspired choice, that jaunty trombone ostinato and the chugga 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 chant feel like they could have been lifted straight from The Wiggles, or whatever candy-colored nightmare kids are torturing their parents with these days. It was one of those glorious late summer, early fall days in the Hudson Valley that make it obvious why the Europeans couldn't not hegemonize the shit out of it. In fact, subjugation and emancipation were on my mind throughout our chat, especially the power of words to do either. Where Francisco found freedom in avoiding labels and designations, for Janet, words have been their way out of trauma and into a firm sense of self and identity. However, as they acknowledge, the box you tick can also box you in.
My name is Janet Werther. My pronouns are they, them. And I was born on Long Island, but when I was six, I had just finished kindergarten, we moved upstate to Cooperstown, New York, which is where I did most of my growing up. It's a very, very small town. And I mean, it's so small that in the wintertime, when there are no baseball tourists, there are more cows in Cooperstown than people. So everybody knows everybody and everything about everybody. And it's a little bit like being a celebrity, but much worse paid. It's funny to even think about having been in the closet, because it feels like that was actually like a very short part of my youth. I just didn't know anything. When the Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky scandal happened, and I think I was in about sixth grade, and my mom would talk kind of nonstop about oral sex and how it was real sex. And I, knowing nothing about anything, was just like, oh my God, ugh, mom, I would never do that ever. Like, don't worry. And she was like, no, like, we have to talk about this. You have to know it's serious. And I was like, look, if marriage is a permanent sleepover, just trust that I'm not ever going to do that with a boy. Like, that would defeat the purpose. I'm obviously only ever going to do that with a girl, so I don't know what to tell you. And my mom's response to, like, 12-year-old Janet was like, you can't just choose to be a lesbian, which I didn't know what that was. And then was like, if any of my children really were gay, I would love him and I would support him and I would do whatever I could to help him because it's such a hard life. But you're not. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't know what 3/4 of those words are, so, like, fine. And then I went through a phase in, when I was around 16 where I was just like, you know, I think everyone's, like, a little bit bisexual. And, you know, like, because in part I had gone to a pre-professional dance program that had some very attractive people at it, I started sort of promoting the philosophy that everyone is a little bit bisexual, but not talking about my own crushes that I was starting to have on girls, and certainly not exploring my gender identity. For me, I was closeted about my gender identity for much longer than my sexuality, because with the tiny amount of access that I had to information about queer people, I figured out my sexuality, I think, as quickly as the world would let me. I knew that there were gay men. My family never watched The Ellen Show, but we watched Will and Grace. And ironically, my dad and my brother and other people around me would make fun of me in the context of Jack from Will and Grace, and likening my hyperfemininity and my theatricality to Jack's in a way that I was like, yes. Right? But I didn't know how to affiliate with that or articulate why and how that felt correct and weirdly affirming when people were trying to make fun of me. I went through a lot of, I was undiagnosed with my neurodivergence until I was 35 and a parent. So a lot of the thing that made it harder to figure myself out, I think, were there was always a little bit of wheel spinning happening to try and just like keep up with life that I couldn't figure out why, right? Like that whole ADHD, why are you not living up to your potential train that I was on? And trauma, home life, trauma, sexual trauma, etc. So just trying to fit in, trying to be loved and cared for in a way that felt sustainable. I did not have the most stable upbringing. And I was put in a sort of co-parent-like status from a very early age. So I often don't feel like I had the chance to really explore and experiment and just like try shit out, try shit on. I was one of the primary caregivers for my younger sister when I was 9. And I was responsible for a lot of caregiving labor for both that sister and the sister who was 2 years older than she was, from the time I was 9 until I graduated from high school. So I had to sort of lean in to my black and white nature to create some semblance of stability and to create the conditions for all of us to be fed and washed and put to bed, right? Children raising children. But when I came out as gay, I came out and I told everybody and I was not in the closet, and then I lost all my friends. In part as an effort to heal after some trauma, I had joined a Pentecostal evangelical church. I was raised mostly Catholic, and I have a little bit of sort of hidden Jewish history and peripheral family members who are practicing Jewish folks, so I always like to say I'm Jewish. My grandmother told my mom she was teaching us Polish and she was teaching us Yiddish. But I was raised really predominantly Catholic, and all of the people that I was dancing with were born again Pentecostals. And I had been through a really difficult experience looking for love, looking for acceptance, looking to understand myself and try and prove to myself that I was normal. I had at 17 a showmance with a 28-year-old man who I did not know was engaged to somebody else. It was very difficult, very traumatic. And I ended up at church with all my dance friends. And I got born again. I got dunked. I sang and danced and spoke in tongues. Yeah, I had the whole experience. And then I went to college and was seeking out the Campus Crusaders. And those were my friends. And I think a lot of people who have never experienced membership in a tight-knit group of Christians who self-perceive as an oppressed minority do not know how much that experience can feel like a weighted blanket. You know, people who meet me are stunned to find out that I self-selected into that experience. But there is no community more close-knit, because it is y'all against the world, and y'all are out to save the world together. You make friends with people faster than summer camp, you know? I knew friends in that group who would talk about when a gay friend of theirs broke up with their boyfriend, that now was the right time to witness to him because he would be more receptive to the gospel because he was single. So I should have known. I should have expected what would happen when I came out. But I am a very literal person, neurodivergence. I was being given a very literal interpretation of the gospel. And I sat with it with my logic brain and took it all literally, like I was being told to take it. At first I was like, hey, I figured something out. I like girls. But we all know that God is all powerful and God is all knowing. So obviously God made me this way. So this is gonna be great and fine, right? Like, and we're gonna figure out how to be the, you know, campus crusaders who are rainbow positive, because like God made us this way and God is powerful and wonderful. Like, why wouldn't we rejoice in the beautiful diversity that God has blessed us with? I stopped being allowed to teach liturgical dance to the girls at my church. My college friends started rejecting me. I became very isolated, which then got me thinking as I was sitting alone with my Bible, like, do I really believe that I was made out of some guy's rib? Like, do I really believe that that's how womanhood came into the world, via rib? No, I'm gonna go with no on that one. But when I worked up the courage to go to our campus LGBTA, deep thanks to my friend Meyer, who waited for me every day for a week as I walked past with my lunch, not entering the room. My then still ongoing efforts to reconcile my faith with my queerness were not welcome there either. I was weird. I was first, you know, if you've ever been to a college undergraduate gay center, I was fresh meat. That felt a little weird. But also, I was still trying to work through whether or not I felt it was possible for me to be a person of faith and a queer person. And both of these communities were telling me no. So I didn't stay hanging out there for very long. And I ended up in a year-ish long relationship with a guy who had been my friend, who knew that I was a lesbian, who had been a very good friend, but was very not a good partner, and who ultimately did not respect my autonomy, my bodily autonomy, and who I couldn't be friends with anymore when I finally came back to my queerness as an important part of who I am, that I could no longer... I mean, yeah, it's literally the metaphor of the closet works here, right? Because it was like, just gonna put that sweater. It's like not really fitting right now. I'm just gonna like put it in the back of the closet because I'm on my like weight loss journey right now. And I'm gonna like, you know, wear my skinny clothes, which like I was also in the throes of an eating disorder at this time. It was a very difficult, very unhealthy time for me. Eventually, it was like, you know, I have to take that sweater back out because actually, if I'm gonna like stay alive, it's the only thing that I own that I can fit into as a healthy version of myself.
If you live in the greater New York area or have a good microphone and would like to share your story on Closet Practice, anonymously or not, message me on Twitter at DocumentaB, on Instagram at DocumentaBarbarism, online at DocumentaBarbarism.com, or by email to buttstuff@DocumentaBarbarism.com, with only one A in barbarism. That's DocumentaBarbarism. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe to House of Barbarism on your pod thingy of choice so you don't miss a single episode of Adventures in Gabysitting and Closet Practice every Monday, and Documenta and Son every Thursday.
At this point, I think I was a junior in college, and I came out again for apparently the third time, right? If we're counting when I was 12. Started finding community less on campus and more in the real world. Went to my first dyke bar and talked probably, like I'm a little bit hyperlexic sometimes, so probably talked like ad nauseum about being gay. Had the delightful experience of one of my fellow dance students asking in earshot if I was still going to be using the same dressing room, as if the gay boys and the straight boys hadn't been using the same dressing room our entire time there. And I just was like, honey, you're not that cute. Like, don't worry. In that first round of coming outs that I was coming out, it was like a whole world shift, community shift. It was like, who can I ever find? You know, I think about this a lot when I read like queer history and the notion that coming out 100 years ago was not coming out of a closet so much as coming out into queer community. And that didn't happen for me until I was turning 21 in my junior year of college, coming out again. The other times that I, you know, at 12 when I was trying to explain myself to my mom, or at 19 when I first really understood and experienced bodily my queer desire, I was watching a dance performance with all women that was like it was a dance by a choreographer that I knew very well, and I knew these dancers, and is like a very aggressive piece, and I had seen it done before with all men and with a mix of men and women. But when I saw it done with an all-female cast, including a woman that I hadn't realized how much of a crush I had on her, who had also herself recently come out and was sartorially demonstrating that new experience, right? It was like, whoa, I'm a gay. And so that was what had predicated, right, at 19, my announcing this to my church community and not going so poorly. But it wasn't until I was almost 21 that I experienced coming out as something that brought you into some kind of community, which I think is fucking key. With all of that said about my gayness, I did not have a word for myself as a non-binary person until I was in my 30s, and I came out simultaneously to myself and to our professional community as non-binary for the first time in 2016 on stage giving a plenary talk. I had been giving my presentation on trans and non-binary casting in theater, and I was asked a question about what I meant by one of the things that I was talking about as non-binary representation, and I weed myself in my response. as like a member of non-binary people and then was like, oh yeah, that is what it is. Like, I've been trying for a decade to talk about how my femininity is not cis femininity and is not just women are feminine and therefore as a woman person, I am feminine. Like, I've been trying to talk my way out of this box for a decade and getting angry when I read gay scholars who say that women can't be effeminate, or when I can't articulate why when I'm reading Place for Us by D.A. Miller, that I, like, why is it that I am weed into this, even though he's saying it's not the same for women? And I'm like, but it is for me, right? And it's like, because I'm not just women. And a huge part of my queerness is also my affiliation with effeminate gay masculinity. And I often feel most at home expressing myself in those ways that are, you know, it's like my, when I feel most femme, I also feel most boy. And I feel very akin, very at home with people and in contexts that are gay and male. And that doesn't mean I don't also affiliate with dyke culture, right? Like, I'm a big participant in and big fan of dyke culture, and I love a good butch. But also, there's that part of me that is just Jack. I didn't have words for that, right? Like, I was in the closet about that for so long, in part because I just didn't have a context for it. I didn't have words for it. And then I would say I stayed more explicitly, or I have stayed more explicitly in the closet with that particular identity, because it sometimes feels too complicated for people to understand. People don't want to respect it if they don't have a context for it or if they don't understand it. But I don't owe anybody a 25-minute story about how I understand my gender. It's a lot to constantly have to justify that I am non-binary, that I use they/them pronouns, and that my kids call me mama. And that I sometimes wear dresses. And that none of those things make me less of a boy. So I just don't really press it most of the time, because the cost-benefit analysis still feels not really worth it. I have been having, in the last year or so, 2 years maybe, pandemic time is weird, that kind of bifurcation of the closet that I really never experienced with my gayness, because I was only as in the closet with my gayness as I was to myself. But that sense of, like, how do I articulate myself in different contexts, and what happens when worlds collide? Right? And who am I going to make uncomfortable in a context where worlds are colliding and therefore words are colliding? Someone is going to see me as letting something slide. Someone is going to see me as, right, there's always that cishet thing of being like, it's a put on. And, like, as theater people, right? Like, I'm like, it's all a fucking put on, right? Like, here's Judith Butler for you. But, you know, I am a theatrical person. It's also part of my neurodivergence, right? Like, there's no version of me that's not theatrical. So when someone is like, that's a put on, it's like, have we met? I am pretty darn out with my teaching colleagues, but, like, I know that many of my undergrad WGSS students are, like, very invested in having a non-binary, non-cis professor to look up to. And I, like, one of the things that for me is still a conundrum, where and how to identify myself on a trans spectrum, publicly. Because as a person with cis passing privilege, in a world in which TERFs on the internet always start the fight saying, I'm not cis, I don't want to ever be the I'm not cis lady. And I don't want to take spotlight or resources from people whose trans experience is more administratively difficult than mine, shall we say, and for whom there is less wiggle room in the world. And I think my colleagues have somewhat of an understanding of that. I mean, maybe some of them see me as sort of like woman light, but that sense of nuance, right, that I identify both as non-binary people and as woman-affiliated people is like kind of clear and understood in that context in a way that is a bit nuanced for some of my students. So I feel sometimes that I have to be very, very careful about how I talk about my affiliation with womanhood with my students so that they don't feel betrayed or that I'm faking. And then on the other hand, if I'm in a context with colleagues or friends who know that I'm non-binary, who know that I use they, them pronouns, and who are respectful of that, and then I'm in a context talking with someone who's an administrator or who's a family member or something to that effect, right? In a context where the cost-benefit analysis of even talking about what it means to be non-binary is just not worth my time and my spoons and the possible risks. I mean, I did actually have a colleague one time when an administrator, like she heard me in a group email be like, do you want me to say something? I can say something. It's like, no, that is okay. Like, this is not a battle that I am ready to have right now with this particular person, right? And I don't always want my identity to be like a battle. But then there's always the risk or the fear that I am letting people down or that I'm further confusing people when I don't insist on it. Yes, I'm a contingent faculty member and I'm still finishing my PhD and I have kids to provide for. But as like a full grown ass adult who studies this shit, like maybe I should be the one insisting to administration that they use the pronouns that are in my email signature. Or maybe I'm doing a disservice to my students by letting their picture of non-binary be a little more black and white and not also sometimes wearing dresses when I teach, because I've prioritized in that context them getting my pronouns right rather than them having like an expanded, more nuanced understanding of what non-binary can look like and feel like in the world. But maybe that's a disservice to them. So it comes around with like a lot of like sense of responsibility to others. And it's very hard sometimes to take a step back and be like, what do I want out of my gendered experience in the world? The uptake of they, them, and the uptake of non-binary was so useful for me for figuring out in a more nuanced way who I am and who I want to be in the world. And yet it's difficult to see it just become like one more box. And so the fluidity or the indeterminacy, which is also for me a social experience, I have a different experience of my gender in a dyke bar than I do meeting up for the first time in what will now be, years with a bunch of other musical theater queens to talk musical theater. You know, like, my gender is different in those two contexts. And it doesn't always feel like there's space for that kind of indeterminacy. And the feeling that I had to know, that I had to be like, this is what my gender is. I'm an adult professional. I'm giving a plenary talk. right, was like actually very anxiety-inducing at the time when I was first coming out as non-binary. So figuring out that, like, for me, fluidity and indeterminacy is like part of it, and then seeing how limited the space for that is very challenging. And so it was both recognizing that she, her was not quite right, and also the way in which the experience of hesitation itself, like, demonstrated that indeterminacy. Both of those things felt really good. I didn't even have words for it at 12, right? And yet I felt very clear about my feelings. And the world feels much more complicated now than it did for me as a 12-year-old, which I think is natural. At times, I very much miss that sense of certainty. It's one of the reasons that I was attracted to the religious group that I had been attracted to, right? That sense of certainty is so comforting. And as a neurodivergent person, and I keep saying neurodivergent person because I don't have a formal autism diagnosis, but I do have a formal ADHD diagnosis. But as a neurodivergent person, I have this ironic mix of being like constitutionally incapable of fitting myself into the correct boxes and also feeling very soothed by black and white thinking. Maybe I could write a dissertation faster if I had a sense of certainty. Maybe it would feel easier to parent my children in a fucked up world with a sense of certainty. But I also think it's a false thing. Like, I think that certainty, if it's more than temporary, if it's not contingent, then I just think it's like covering over a lot of complexity, and that complexity is real. And if queer is a non-normative, frictional stance toward the world, and if we are going to follow, as Jose Munoz says queerness does, always further along the horizon toward a queerness that we haven't yet achieved, then there is no stasis. There is no, I found it, I did it, I am it, I can put a box around it. So yes, I do think it is healthy. I think it is very difficult, and I think it is healthy to learn to find comfort in the discomfort of knowing that there is no final destination. There are approximations, right? Every queer identity term is still an umbrella. This is something that I do talk about with my students all the time. Like, we have all of these, you know, we had queer. And so many of us could fit under queer. And there were problems with that because people with privilege were the ones who were listened to, right, and whatever. But now we have all these little micro identities. But, you know, you can be a gay but biromantic, demi boy, right? All of these things. And you can find someone else who shares those exact micro words. And your experiences will not be the same. You will not have found a matched pair, right? Like, there are no matching socks here. And I think that if there's one thing that I can help my children do better than myself in this world, it is to try and give them enough security that being able to swim in the uncertainty and the ambivalence, the complications that are unresolvable, will not feel so destabilizing and so anxiety-inducing for them, because they will know that they at least have like a stable base of like love and acceptance and a place to come back to and figure it out. I would like for my kids to feel like they can try things out, try things on, to feel like they're not going to be judged for having phases. And I want them to know that they have agency within that, that I will believe who they say they are, even if it's different from who they said they were yesterday, and if even if it's different from who they might be tomorrow. That if they are something for today, that is enough.
This has been another House of Barbarism podcast, written, recorded, edited, and produced by Document of Barbarism, your friendly neighborhood mountain man fairy princess. Remember, there is no document of civilization which is not, at the same time, a Documenta Barbarism. Mwah.